Blog Talk Radio. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to all my blessed beloveds out there in listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty. I'm Rusty, and today we have author Marcia Brees on. I'm hoping I'm not botching her name. I just finished half of her book, and it's good. It's a fun read, Secrets Lost, and I'll pull her on in a little bit. I'm not sure if Amy's coming on today or not. I know that she's just been crazy busy, but she might pop in at some point. I also wanted to remind everybody that this is Celiac Awareness Month. So for those of us who have celiac disease, this month is for us. Eat up, enjoy gluten-free, and love it. The weather is very cold here in New England. I think I'm Rip Van Winkle and slept through summer because all I'm feeling is fall, folks, and I'm not liking it. I'm really looking forward to summer. My pasty legs could use some color. So hurry up, 70-degree weather. Get here soon. My vegetables and my legs need you. I've had an interesting journey over the last 3 years, divorced, trying to date, and I've come up with this crazy, crazy radio show idea. And I'm throwing it out there because I know that OT's listening. I invited OT and his team from Not Your Typical Radio to discuss runaway bride syndrome. What does that mean? I know for me, I've ran into a couple of dates that I really, really, really liked, but I had to go. I was out of there. I ran away. So it'll be fun, and I think that show is going to be June 5th. So definitely look at the schedule on facebook.com/celiacroads to keep abreast of all of the cool and wonderful things that are coming your way. I'm going to pull Marcia on now. Hello, Miss Marcia. Good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Rusty. How are you?
I am very well. As I, you're on the West Coast, is that correct?
I am. I'm about as West Coast as you can get.
That's right. That's right. I believe you're having similar weather.
Actually, today is sunny and about 65 and amazing. We've had an amazing spring here. The rhododendrons and the azaleas, everything is just beautiful. So, yeah, spring came early here.
Very cool. Very cool. We had a 1 week of stunning, spectacular weather. Everybody got their garden manicures and pedicures done, and this week has just been, I think we're pushing 55 today. I'm in a sweater. I'm going, really? I'm good.
Yeah, we're good. All ready for summer this time of year.
Amen. Amen. So why don't you let us know who you are and what do you do?
Well, my name is Marcia Brees. I am a multitasker. I retired from the corporate world, more appropriately escaped from the corporate world a few years ago, and I opened a bed and breakfast and did that for a while and realized that was not retirement. And then I took 2 years and rented a little cottage, and I wrote Secrets Lost. That's pretty much all I did for almost 2 years. And now I help other authors publish their books, self-publish. Seems to be the way the world's going, and I've had the experience of doing 2 books now, so that's where I spend my time.
Very cool. So let's take one of your multiple hats, and let's talk about the self-publishing, because the book itself I want to spend the majority of the show on. It's a great read, and I highly recommend it, and it's rare when I actually highly recommend a book, so being a book snob. So talk to us about the self-publishing aspect of Marcia, that arm.
Well, it started mostly with e-books. Well, it still is. There's a lot of authors that can't get agents, or they try and try and try, can't get an agent, can't get published. And so e-books are a way into that. And So I learned how to do that, and it's surprisingly easy. But most authors would rather be writing than learning how to do that. So they call me, send me their manuscripts, and I upload them to Amazon, Kindle, Barnes & Noble Nook, and to Kobo, where independent bookstores sell them. Mm-hmm. And then eventually, if they want, then I can help them also get the books printed. So I have kind of a network of editors and web designers and graphic artists and kind of a network of people that can help. You know, I always say I don't know how to do anything. I just know how to find the people that do. And so that's kind of how I'm spending my time, or that's how I'm making a living now. I'd rather be writing all the time, but I still have to make a living, so that's what I'm doing.
Very cool. And is that a difficult process? Do they get, I know that there's copyright and SKUs and all that sort of thing. Do you do all of that for them too?
Yeah, I get all that done for them. So, or I teach them how to do it. One, you know, it depends on what the author needs. But all those. It's really surprisingly simple. It's just there's a lot of arms and legs, you know. So that's what I do.
Very cool. All right. So, Secrets Lost. This was a fabulous journey, and I could totally feel myself as a part of her reinventing herself and really acknowledging the depth. We are very, very busy people, and I think we neglect to really own and acknowledge our real person. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Am I articulating it without giving too much away? I'm trying so hard not to.
No, you nailed it, yeah.
So tell us a little bit about, you know, what inspired you to write this book. And I'm going to read a couple of pages at some point because I want people to get a taste of the way it feels. But give us the inspiration.
I started off, after I sold the farm and the bed and breakfast, I started off writing a book about my grandparents. I have tons of letters and pictures and all kinds of things, and I thought that's what I was going to write. And then one day I actually have a pair of glasses that were my grandmother's. Mm-hmm. And although I didn't have them there with me, I was thinking about them for some reason. And then at that same time, I was starting to learn these kind of new philosophies and concepts of life. And it all kind of came together in the glasses. Like, what if a pair of glasses could help you see all these layers of life or what's really, really happening on the planet? I don't think we really have a clue. And I don't know how all that came to me. It just did. And so the book suddenly took a turn and was kind of written around those glasses and what happened, what might happen if you had a pair of glasses that could help you see things and understand what's really happening in the world. So the inspiration, I guess, was those glasses.
Very cool. So as I read through the book, it sounds like there are some historical and intimate details from your person. Did I read that correctly, or is it most of it?
Yeah.
Very cool.
If you read my bio, in fact, some people like that and some people don't, that a lot of the book is real-life stuff that happened to me and to my friend Jason Barrow, his stories, my stories, and stories of people that I interviewed kind of all got fictionalized and wrapped into the story. So people that know me wonder if it's a sequel to my memoir. It's really not, but there's a lot of it that's real too.
So what was your favorite character?
Oh gosh, I guess Yuri. I wish I knew someone like him. I know people that are kind of like him, but he wasn't, it'd be hard to find a real person that was like Yuri. He was fun to write about. He was based on my friend Jason, but I really fictionalized it a lot, so that was my favorite.
All right, so I'm going to take, I'm just going to pick a random page here. let's see. Evidently, she didn't go to her father's funeral, and so
no.
I'm going to pick up from there. You didn't go. The evening sun at her back made Biz's long hair more blonde than gray as she leaned over to untie her Stuart Witzman She placed them neatly by the old trunk, sat on the sofa, and propped her perfectly pedicured toes on the coffee table. That's right. I didn't go. Isn't that disrespectful of your father, even if you weren't close? Said Biz. I don't think he noticed, Morgan said in a low voice as she took a sip of wine. She leaned to the side, avoiding the evening sun on her face. What about your mom, brother, and sister? Biz continued. Don't you want to support each other? Mom divorced him 13 years ago while I was in India. Then she moved to Bellingham to be close to my sister. She'll miss him even less than I will, if that's possible. You never told me they divorced. How long were they married? 49 years. I called it the end of the long war. Biz looked shocked and wondered why she knew so little about Morgan's family. I'm going to leave it there, but what I love about that revelation in the book is we do this in life. We have these great relationships with people, but they're very surface. Can
mm-hmm.
you expand on that?
Oh, absolutely. I'm glad you... That's really rewarding to me to see that you picked up that and that it's so obvious. Yeah, and I really do have friends, especially from the corporate world, who I've known for 20 years, who don't have a clue who I am.
Right.
So I kind of wrapped up some of those characters into Biz, and what you find is you learn how the world's really working or how it works for you. Some of those relationships endure, and some of them just kind of fade away because you no longer have anything in common. What's important, your core values don't match.
Right.
And it was fun to take that character Biz and help her as well as Morgan kind of grow and begin to see each, really see with a capital S, to see each other.
Yeah, and I love how you go through that process, and it really is, we do this all the time. I can tell you personal experience. I worked for a company for 4.5 years, and nobody knew I was married.
Yeah, nobody knew I was a mom when I had a corporate life.
I mean, you know, nobody knew I was married. They just thought I just existed. And, you know, I'm very good about keeping the professional and not allowing my personal life into that corporate setting. That's why I got out of the corporate setting, and my personal life's everywhere now. But it's just fun because I'll run into these people, you know, down the road, and they're like, oh, you were divorced 3 years ago, we heard. I didn't even know you were married. I'm like, yeah. Works.
Yeah,
but it's interesting how we really compartmentalize our person and have this facade, and it's a lot of work. And I love in here how she, you know, allows her hair to grow out to its natural strawberry gray, strawberry blondish look, and she stops doing the pedicures, and she gets rid of the BMW for an old car. And I love that self-expression and that real definitive self-acceptance that she comes to.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is that something that you went through as well when you left the corporate world?
Yeah, it absolutely did. I had a BMW, and it got smashed in a different way, but it wasn't a red truck, it was a white Ford, but I don't know. I think I saw that losing the BMW as a huge metaphor. For my corporate life, it was like the very last thing that I was still hanging on to, that symbol of what my life was, like I needed it or something. And, you know, I didn't need it. I really didn't. But it had to, you know, it had to be a crash to make me see it. Fortunately, I wasn't hurt, Only the car got hurt. So, that was, although it's fictionalized in the book, I really did experience that. And I see it as a metaphor, you know, that smack
right.
in the face. So, yeah.
That cosmic reminder.
Mm-hmm. Like somebody literally slapped you in the face and said, what are you thinking? You know?
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
So talk to me a little bit more about, you know, the inspiration behind the book, because I can, as I read through, it definitely feels like it has a lot of symbolism and cathartic moments for you personally. And so can you expand on that a little bit?
Yeah, there's inspiration for the book as a whole, and then there's inspiration for each scenario and each vignette or whatever you want to call it. Something happened to me years ago. Well, it wasn't that long ago, but I was in China in a temple, and I realized that building, just the bricks and the packed dirt floor and the Buddha that sat there, all of that had absorbed the people that had come and gone. Whether it was people or energy or what it was, I still don't know that I understand or that I can articulate it. But I was very aware that building was imbued with the energy of the people that had come before.
Mm-hmm.
And I think we've all walked into a house where we felt something different, we knew something, or we've picked up something as simple as a rock or a toy, and you feel something. If you really pay attention, you feel something. And that's what I was starting to learn about when I first started to write and when the glasses kind of came to me. And that experience in the temple like 10 years ago kind of came back, and I thought, and I really do have a trunk that belonged to it was a great, I don't know how many great aunts that came over on a boat from Germany. It wasn't Ireland, but I have that trunk, and I began to see it in a different way. It had been in various attics throughout its life, and it had been in my grandma's garage and my mother's garage and my garage, and so I brought it in, and I gave it a more respected place, and I left the lid open. And I don't know why I did that, but it felt like it deserved it. And I think I've just kind of opened up to allowing things to come to me that I think as a corporate employee and hard-charging executive, I never, ever allowed. It was something that you just didn't even think about. And I guess what I want to do and what I want the book to do and what it helped me do was think. You know, you go through and little things make you think, just something very small, like the thunderstorm in the early part of the book. It symbolized change, sudden change, because that's when she found the glasses. And then after her father dies, there's this huge windstorm. And to me, that was more change. And there's a place later on where she has this big run-in with her sister. And she symbolically, I felt, closed the gate behind her as she came out of the barnyard. And not everybody will see all of those, but that's okay. I think you'll feel them when you read it. So does that answer your question?
Yeah, absolutely. I also love the fact that you have a lot of Rumi in here. If Rumi were still alive, I would be his stalker. I love
Rumi.
I would
be a groupie.
I'd totally be a Rumi groupie.
A Rumi groupie. I already am a Rumi groupie. There's a lady in my neighborhood that has a dog named Rumi, and I can't ever remember her name, but I remember the dog's name.
I remember
He's
the
my
dog.
My idol.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So she goes through this huge transformation. Aside from the metaphoric possibilities of the storm and then what happens to her car. And again, I don't want to give too much away because I want people to actually go out and get it. Then getting, you know, my perfect fantasy vehicle, the bright red oldies truck. I can just see it now. It's how awesome. But she also starts really becoming spiritually aware through this journey. And so tell us the inspiration about the spiritual journey that she's going through, because, I get the sense that Morgan and you are pretty connected.
Yeah, pretty connected. Yeah. I sort of feel like I told a friend the other day, I feel like I'm out of the closet in terms of my spiritual beliefs.
Right.
It's something that we all walk a lot. What I have discovered is there's a lot of people that walk around thinking about these things, but we're so brainwashed, I guess, that this is, you know, woo-woo and out there, and there's something wrong with you if you see colors and hear voices, and you know, you're going to be put away somewhere. And then I know that, and there was a time in the world where if a woman wanted to leave her husband, she was institutionalized. You know, so I've like gave myself permission to study and learn and open up to some of these things that have happened to me my whole life. But I thought, either I thought it or somebody told me, I was crazy. You know, I saw colors when I was a little kid, and they took me to have my eyes checked. You know, and so you stop doing it. I've had all kinds of, it happens all the time. I think we all do it. The one that comes to my mind right now is when my children were babies, literally, you know, two under two. They were in their little seats in the back seat, and I stopped at a green light. And I thought, why did I stop at a green light? And this, you know, huge semi with, I don't know, thousands of wheels went flying through the red light.
Oh, no.
And, yeah, and I don't know what stopped me. Something did. And I guess everyone in the world has an opinion about what that energy is or why it happens. I stay away from the, you know, the bearded guy in the sky, because I don't think that's it. But there's energy out there that takes care of us. And I could go on and on and on of all the times in my life where that energy has intervened. And I think I've just finally opened up to it and say, okay, what should I do now? Or not so much asking questions as just listening to what's there. I find that directions are the thing that is hysterical, because if I try to remember really hard how to get somewhere, I get lost. But if I just get in the car and pay attention, I find my way there. You know, and I think there's another big metaphor. If you just listen, you find your way there. One other thing that's in the book, I took a Reiki class a couple years ago, and I really did put my hands on the duck, and it got better. And I don't know what made that duck get better. I don't know what that energy is. I know the eagle just about killed it, and it came. It's still alive. I went back to the farm a few weeks ago, and it, all the places where the eagle punctured it, the feathers have turned white. It was a black duck, but it's still alive. And I try not to put any judgment or names on that energy that's there, that some of us can tap into. I can tap into it better if I don't try. Anyway, I hope that makes sense. Does that answer your question?
No, it absolutely makes sense. And what's beautiful about this time is, you know, I'm all about intuition and flow, and whatever you need to say, you need to say, and that's beautiful. So don't feel pressured, or I'm just listening. I'm learning more about you, and that's the whole point of this show.
Good.
That's what makes the show cool. All right, so I get the sense that you practice Buddhism.
I guess I do. If you want to, that if you have to put a label to it, I guess that's it. I spent a lot of time in Asia, and I guess if you look around my house, it would be clearer to a stranger than to me. I have lots of little statues and Buddhas around, and I probably should see. There we go, making judgments about it. Yes, I can just say yes.
Very cool. Well, you had mentioned being in Asia at a temple, so I'm, you know, being Buddhist myself, I was like, oh, great, that's cool.
Yeah. I have a friend who's really into it and reads all these books and goes to class and all of that, and I don't do that. But
mm-hmm.
I think energetically, yes, I'm a Buddhist.
Yeah, I'm very big on meditation, yoga, you know, really respecting the power of thought.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I think that's great practice for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
All right, cool.
No matter what you call it. Yeah.
All right, I'm going to take a quick little break here to remind you all that we are on the phone on air with Marcia Brees, and her book is Secrets Lost, Secrets Remembered. Loved it. It was the majority of books that I have read in the last 8 months have been not fiction, and this was pleasurable for me. I'm like, yay! If you have any questions or you want to ask Marcia, more about her book and her inspiration, give us a call here at 347-205-9443. And again, you're listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty, and I'm Rusty. And I want to apologize. I forgot that Amy was at a funeral today, so she will not be joining us. Many prayers and lots of hugs to her and her family for the loss of her aunt. So, Marcia, how do we find this fabulous book? Where do we find you?
My website is marciabrees.com. And I also have, that I just put up, is selfpubbooks.com on the business side. But the book is available online bookstores and all the digital, you know, Kindle, Kobo, and Nook. So if you just Google Marcia Brees, you'll find me. In fact, you'll find more about me than you ever wanted to know. So
that's what I tell people too. Oh, you want to know me? Just Google me.
Yeah. Like it or not, that's how it is.
I know, it's amazing, isn't it?
Sure is.
Thank God there's nothing bad out there.
Right. Well.
So talk to us a little bit more about the book or your work or what you're doing in the future.
Okay. Well, first, before I go any further, I want to make sure that I thank Jason Barrow for helping with the so many aspects of this story. He was, I think I mentioned, he came to the bed and breakfast, stayed there for a while, and we really did sit by the fire every night and talk about spiritual stories, and he helped me kind of take away that block against even thinking about some of these things.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was probably the first person I knew that wasn't afraid to walk around and let people know that he could do these things. He's basically a medium, and he wasn't the least bit shy about, yeah, so I'm a medium, so what? And he wrote a book about intuition called Insight. And without him, I might have eventually gotten there, but he was just huge in supporting me in that effort to learn and just making me feel like it's okay to kind of branch out and let the world go by, you know, and not worry about what everybody thinks. Just do what you do, and that's all you can do. So, and his whole thing was the psychology of positive thinking. So
mm-hmm.
that was real important to me at that time in my life. So it was really helpful to have him, you know, available to me for those months. It was, I can't even thank him enough. It was huge. So in so many ways.
I love that, you know, you have your dedication to him, and then you have a page with gratitude on it. You don't see that often, especially for a book that, you know, technically is nonfiction. It's fiction.
It has to be fiction, but yeah.
Right, right. And, you know, in the process of editing my own book, it just inspired me to do that as well. I love how you say, thanks also to my friend Heidi Jack, who loaned me her tapes and books and patiently read through my manuscript twice before it was ready for the world to see. You know, and I just think that really shows a lot of who you are and your character and how this process really was very cathartic for you.
Yeah, well, I think it's writing as a, whatever you call it, as a hobby or as a profession or whatever, for me as a lifestyle. Well, first, I just want to say that in the book, when you put acknowledgments, almost all authors have a page that's called acknowledgments, and I just wanted to use the word gratitude instead of acknowledge. I think it's a huge,
exactly.
It's a deeper word, it's a better word, and as a writer, that's really how I feel. Without all these other people in my life, I mean, that's what it is. I mean, it's the other people around that make life what it is. And although I was sort of a hermit for 2 years while I wrote it, those people were still very important to me. Writing, let me ask you a question. Is writing a solitary, private thing for you, or do you share your writing with everybody while you're doing it?
I wouldn't say my book is so personal and very real. It's my autobiography, and then so half of it, it's become a beast of its own. That's why I'm in the process of editing. So half of it is, you know, my life story and my challenges and my adversities, and then the other half is all of the worksheets and all of the tools that I used throughout my life or have designed and developed for motivational speaking or life coach work. So I've only let 4 people enter that world.
Mm-hmm.
And 3 out of the 4 cried.
Uh-huh.
Great.
Yeah,
I'm gonna stop on that one.
Yeah. The thing I discovered about sharing my work with others, when I was about 3, I thought I was almost done. I thought I was there. And I let several people read it because I thought I was almost there. And most of them came back and, they all came back and said, oh, it's great. I love it. Yeah. You know, and I'm like, no, I know it needs editing and rewriting and I know it needs work. But nobody, which told me it needed even more than I thought, because there was too much wrong with it for them to tell me the truth.
Oh, no.
I knew that.
Yeah.
So I spent another 6 months going, you know, I beefed up the sister conflict because I think it needed more conflict at that point.
They're pretty scrappy in the book.
Pardon me?
I said they're pretty scrappy in this book. I was very shocked.
Yeah, they are. That's pretty beefed up.
That is very beefed up. I'm like water hose and kitties. That's it. Really, you do that to your 50-year-old sister?
It adds a dimension. Wow. What's that? I'm sorry, what?
No. It does add dimension. It took me back. I'm like, what? You guys are in your 50s. Like, seriously.
Yeah, well, you know, as I won't give away a whole lot, but some of that's true, too. So, yeah, it's
wow.
Families are weird. Families are really an interesting aspect of our lives. And anyway, I won't say any more about families. You can get yourself in trouble.
Yep.
Anyway, I had to isolate myself to do it. I couldn't. I thought about getting a job and, you know, all of those things. And what I did instead was live literally like a hermit and in a very cheap little beach cottage that was fabulous, but tiny and cold and damp, and I couldn't have picked a better place to isolate myself and write this book. I walked the beach every day with the dogs, sometimes sat down there all day and wrote.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes at night the bear would walk through the yard, and I knew he had been there by his, he left scat, so I knew he was there. I never saw him. The deer would come by and just stand and look at me, and there were raccoons and owls and eagles every day. The eagle nest was right over the cottage. The tree was like, I don't know, 50 feet away. And so the eagle nest, and you could hear them all night. It was amazing, the vocalization of eagles. I had no idea. So I watched them raise their babies, and it was just the perfect place to be inspired and to allow nature and things that are absolutely real. There's no question. You know, nobody can say that bear's not real, those eagles aren't real, that vocalization at 2 a.m. isn't real, you're making
right.
it all up. You know, I was so in tune with what is unarguably real in the world and what we miss. You know, you get up and you put on eyeliner and you do your hair and you dash off into an hour and a half of traffic and spend your life not seeing and not being seen by anyone that you come in contact with. Then you're in an hour and a half of traffic home, and you get your hair colored and you have your manicures and you know it's just a crazy life. And I stepped out of all of that and just tried to be real, really, really real and authentic and in my heart instead of in my head. And it was the most wonderful thing I could have done. And I don't think the book would be what it is if I hadn't done that.
What do your kids think about this transformation, the new you, the real you?
You know, my daughter and I haven't talked about it. She's still in her own place. My son actually helped a lot. In fact, at the very last minute, it was almost ready to upload to Amazon. It had been edited, was ready to go. And my son read it, and he said, "Mom, why don't you take this chapter and move it to the very first chapter?" And I said, "Well, that would give it all away." And he said, "No." He said, "That will foreshadow." And that was the best advice I could have had, because I really
cool.
think that's exactly what it does. When you read that first chapter and then begin the second chapter, you start to see the
yeah.
dichotomy, you know, the difference. And without his help, and nobody else that I gave the book to would give me that kind of advice. There were a couple other places where he said, "You know, this doesn't make sense. What are you trying to say?" And then we talk about it, and he said, "Well, then why don't you say that?" You know? And
oh. I love that.
So I think he loved me enough to tell me the truth, where the others, they loved me maybe, but they wouldn't tell me the truth. So anyway, yeah, the kids, it's hard. I think most of my friends are still in that corporate, sleep kind of, and so you can't get a real sense of it from them. So does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Right. So what do you think? What was one of the things that triggered you to really acknowledge this? The corporate life.
That
you were
not right
living.
For me.
Yeah. What was the trigger?
The trigger.
That cosmic 2x4 that we get every now and then.
I was in an international job, very, very high pressure international job. And when I came home from that, and, you know, I had to unwind. I had been in India and Hong Kong, and then well, Hong Kong, then India, then Taiwan, and very intense, very, every day it's like, wow, I get to do this. And that's how I got to go to temples and do some of the other stuff. But mm-hmm. I was so busy, I didn't really get to experience India or any of the stuff. I truly experience it. And
right.
when I came home, I don't know, it was like, there's got to be more. There just has to be more. And you begin to feel that there's more. And I think, you know, age starts to kind of take over and make you realize, you know, you've only got a finite number of years on this planet. And if you don't start really living the way you want to live, the time will run out. And so I was about, I don't know, almost 60, I think, when I bought the farm. I shouldn't say that.
Careful.
I bought the farm.
I was 60 when I bought the farm, but you know.
No, I was younger than that. I don't know. I was in my 50s. Fortunately, then I sold the farm, so it's okay. I don't know what made me do that. It was in the book, you know, it's kind of romanticized a little bit. But I did. I called a realtor and I said, I got to get out of here. Somebody walked in and bought my condo for an outrageous amount of money in the height of the real estate market. And
mm-hmm.
I had no idea what I was going to do, but I thought, if somebody will pay me that much for this condo, I'm getting out of here. And so that's when I decided to do the B&B. And I guess it was at that point, it was like, if you're going to continue to breathe, you've got to change something. You know, so I wish I could put a better wrapper on it, but it was just, I think there again, that energy knows what it's supposed to do, even though your brain doesn't know. And so I ended up with a llama ranch, which was just a hoot. I miss it every day. But it was also a lot of work for one 60-year-old lady, I'll tell you.
I bet.
Yeah. Yeah, I had 5 llamas and 30 chickens and I don't know how many ducks and geese. And I loved it. It was a blast. I'd love to do it again. But it's hard to do all by myself. So, yeah.
Well, what a cool journey. And I'm so grateful that we've crossed paths. And last week we had Dennis Buckmeister on and his wife. And they were a lot of fun and they gave you a huge shout out. So, I'm grateful that we've been
nice.
Able to have
yeah,
this time.
I helped them. Yeah. And I think you talked to Caroline Fleur. I know
yes.
her, too.
Yep.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
So, and she wrote a great book about her daughter. So, I have listened to you.
Yay.
Nice
yeah.
Author interview. So.
She, Carolyn just... I was amazed. I was really thrown back because the kind of bravery
and
strength to go through something like that. That was
and then write
that was
about
a tough
it.
One. Yeah, I was like, all right, I'm not going to cry today. I'm not going to cry during the show.
Yeah, I know. Well, I did her ebook. I formatted
you
her
did?
Ebook, and usually when I format ebooks, I don't really read them. It's all about formatting. So in fact, that's. Some of the research I did at the cottage, I would format an ebook and listen to Wayne Dyer or, you know, whoever
right.
it was. I'd listen to a tape while I formatted a book. And hers, I couldn't do that. I had to turn everything off and I read it, you know. It was so moving. And I give her a lot of credit for having the courage to write it. So,
yeah, and
it must have been fun to interview her.
She was very, very sweet. So we have about 14 minutes left of the show, and this is the part of the show that I give you an extra little challenge, and I have a feeling that you're going to meet it hands down with
okay.
beautiful grace. If there was any message that you want over 90,000 listeners internationally to hear from you today, any one important thing or two important things, you've got 13 minutes. What is it that, you know, it will inspire other people? Or what do you want them to take away from today?
Wow, you know, I don't think it'll take 13 minutes. it's very simple. Slow down and breathe and listen. We, like I said earlier, we move so fast and we think so much of what we do is based on what other people think of us. And if you can step away from what other people think of you and just do what you think is best for you, you will find that your life suddenly starts to fall together, or it's more of a come together than fall together. There are times now that I walk around on the beach. I walk the beach every day. I'm in a different beach cottage now, but I'm on the Strait of Juan de Fuca, and I walk the beach every day, sometimes with the dogs and sometimes by myself and sometimes with my journal. And a couple days ago, I was down there, and I thought, you know, life can't be this good. Something's got to happen because life can't be this good. And, of course, I make a fraction of what I made financially. It's not that great. You know, that's not the stick to measure things by, although it was for me for a long time. Achievement. I don't care what my title is or what people think of me. I'm down there on the beach listening. I heard a little girl tell her daddy, the water's singing to us. Mm. And I think if we could all hear the water sing to us and know that, no, it doesn't, nothing else matters. You know, don't put the emphasis and the power, don't give away your power, I guess. And so I sit down there and I have to remind myself every day that, yes, it can. It really can be this good. And if I don't mess it up, nobody else can either. Yeah, there's people that say your head's in the sand. Well, come on, wake up. Look, you had this great career and you gave it up. It's like, yeah, isn't that great? Oh, I gave it up. I don't think I could have done a better thing for myself. I don't know if I probably could not have survived like that for much longer. So here I am on my beach, and whatever it is for you, whether it's a beach or a flower or a dark corner, I mean, it doesn't matter where that place is. It doesn't have to be a physical place, as long as you can go there in your head and in your heart. It's more your heart than your head, but go to those places. And for me right now, it's this beach, and I can go there even if I'm here in my bedroom. I mean, it doesn't matter where I am, I can go there and be who I am and completely wholly who I am, as authentic as I can be, and life can't be any better than that. It just can't. That's what we're here for. And I have quit looking for my purpose. My purpose is just to be here and be happy, and not apologetic for being happy. I think we all have that core value, or a lot of us have been, there's something missing. If you're happy all the time, then clearly you're not seeing things real, you know, in a real way. And I disagree with that. I think if you're happy, then you are seeing what's really real, and you're not seeing all the other stuff. I've kind of quit listening to the news. You know, I used to listen 2 or 3 times a day, and or read it online or wherever, and I don't do that anymore. I try to kind of know what's generally happening in the world, but I think each of us, okay, here we go. This is my big philosophy. I think each of us has energy inside ourselves that when we walk around, I don't care if it's a grocery store or where you are, you have this bubble of energy around you. And if that energy is happy, then the people that bump into your bubble will feel that happiness. And some of us have bigger bubbles than others. Some of us barely can get that off our skin. And then some of us have it huge all around for miles. And I guess I am just allowing that bubble to get bigger and bigger and bigger. And I want to keep writing about those things and hopefully allow other people to, or encourage other people to allow their own energy to, you know, to expand around them. We focus too much on the negative. If we focus on the positive, they'll be more positive. And it's okay to be really happy. That's okay. So, in a nutshell, that's, I guess it's not such a nutshell, but that is my philosophy of life and the message that I hope my book and just my energy walking around is able to project.
Absolutely. And what I love about your story, not only your book, because I've already said, go out and get it. I love this book. is really, you know, you've done what we're programmed to do. You know, you had the kids, you had the great career, you traveled, even though I travel and I can totally relate. You can go to whatever country, whatever state. You know, a couple of weeks ago I was in L.A. for, I think, 12 hours working. So you don't really get to explore and really harmonize and really get to sink your teeth into the cultures or when you're this busy person. So I can totally relate to that. And I also appreciate the fact that it, you know, it took you some time, but you started really listening to yourself and becoming authentic and realizing that, yes, you had this great job and it gave you, you know, big bucks and you had insurance and the whole nine, you know, 401k, whatever.
Yep, there you go.
But, you know, if it was such a great job, you'd still be doing it.
Exactly.
And that's what people, I don't think, I think people wrap their head, we're so programmed the other way.
Mm-hmm.
And we've really missed what makes us happy
mm-hmm.
in every
oh,
aspect
yeah.
of our life. So, and yeah. I think you brought that out very, very eloquently in this book, too.
Oh, thanks. Thank you.
Very cool. So, when's the next book?
You know, I've been
no
struggling with myself. Yeah, no pressure. it'll probably be 2 or 3 years from now by the time I get it written. It's floating around in my head, and I decided I would take, well, I thought a year, but I don't think I'm going to make it that long before I immerse myself in another story. I still have all of the letters and thousands of pictures, black and white images that my mother's parents, and my granddad, he was a big photography nut, so I have all of his photography, and he has a very rich history of going to Montana to homestead and all those things, and it would make a great story. I've got to sit down and figure out how I can pull all that together, but I have to put this kind of spiritual bend on it somehow, and I haven't figured out yet how to do that. So, I'm letting it cook around in my brain and going to some writing classes and talking to other writers about how they take an idea and mold it into a story. And I know that ultimately all I have to do is just sit down and start writing.
Mm-hmm.
And it will come, you know, it will, it does, whether I like it or not, it still does. I've been writing, you know, little bits and pieces just because I like to write every day. But I don't know when all of that will, I kind of see it like a big tornado and all of a sudden it'll drop everything and it'll be what it has to be. But it'll probably take me a couple more years to do that. So,
all right.
But I appreciate
so
the
I'll
support.
Talk to you in a couple more years.
Keep you posted.
Keep me posted. I might be in Tahiti by then.
I'm sorry, what?
I said I'll be in Tahiti by then, but I'll keep my PO box for you.
Is that where you want to go?
You know, I'm just manifesting somewhere warm.
Yes, warm. Yeah, there's that.
Yeah, there's that piece.
I guess for me it's the water. I just need
I love
the water. Yeah, I didn't know that. I grew up in Ohio. I had no idea that the water was so important to me. First I thought it was the mountains. And it's both. It's huge for me. And I haven't figured out why yet. That could be an interesting story, too, whether it's real or not.
I think for me, it's very, you know, I have ocean a few miles from here that I love to go and visit. The water is so cold, my little toes turn piggly pink.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm originally from Florida, so I can't appreciate this water as much as I can when I'm in Florida in July.
When it's warm, yeah.
When it's warm and I can stick my body in there. But for me, you know, if I'm having a real rough day, that's the first place I go is to a body of water because I don't know if it's nurturing and very womb-like to me.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's very
absolutely.
Encompassing.
Yeah, for me it's the sound of the water.
Yeah.
It's as much the sound as it is the actual water itself. And, you know, here the water never gets very warm, and that's why I'm in Fort Townsend and the community never gets that warm because we're so close to the water. It's not
right.
Like it's the opposite of Florida. But sometimes I take my shoes off and walk where there's a lot of it's rock, but there's a few sandy spots, and I walk barefoot. And, I don't know, this amazing sense of gratitude always kind of just anchors me to the sand. I try to let it. You know, it's, I always feel better after I do that, even though I didn't know I felt bad. You know, it's very cleansing and grounding and real. I guess I'm really focused on real stuff right now. So, yeah.
You really are. You are a hot ticket, Miss Marcia. I'm going to wrap up the show. We've got about 2 minutes left, and we're talking to Marcia Breese, Secrets Lost, Secrets Remembered. Go and check her out at Marcia Breese, BREECE.com. She's got a lot to offer and a lot to talk about, and this story was really cool. I loved how it came together for you.
Thank you.
So grateful to have you on the show today.
Well, it's been so much fun. This is, it's everybody likes to talk about themselves and their work, so it's perfect. I love it. Thank you for the opportunity.
You're welcome.
It's great. Wonderful.
You're most welcome, and high five to you and all that you do, and keep on being authentic. It's cool stuff.
Thank you. I will. I can't not do it now.
Exactly. It becomes an addiction.
Yeah, it really is. So.
All right. Well, you are listening to Living and Thriving with Rusty. I'm Rusty. We just had fabulous Marcia Breese on the line to chat about life and, you know, becoming authentic and understanding what's real versus what just really doesn't matter. And, God, I love those stories. Next week, I have Anthony Mundell on. He is the author of At Left Brain, Turn Right. He's going to try to teach me how to crisscross my brain. So this will be truly exciting. He also teaches acting workshops, and I guess he's a producer, director, winning writer, and artist. But we're having him on the show to take a right turn when your brain's taking a left. That, to me, is very exciting. We should learn quite a bit. As always, I want to say that I love you. I think you're beautiful. I'm amazed by you. And the show would not be possible if it wasn't for you. So have a great humpity hump day, and I'll talk to you next Wednesday. With much love and adoration.